Think advertising on TikTok isn't for your business? Think again.
With TikTok ads, we went from 250,000 downloads to over 1 million downloads in less than a year.
I'm Eve.
I'm Anam, and we're the co-founders of Alinea.
Alinea Invest is an investing app for Gen Z.
We run 50 new ads per week with 3 variations thanks to TikTok Smart Plus campaigns. If you're not advertising on TikTok, you're missing out.
Drive more app downloads only on TikTok. Head over to getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads.
From the unexplained to the mundane, come join us on a journey to the fringe.
Hello and welcome to Journey to the Fringe, where our research is generally better than the assholes we cover, and somehow they're the ones that make a career of this. Go figure. We are your slightly salty podcast hosts, Taylor and Chelsea, here continuing on with one of these said researchers, David Politis. If you didn't listen to part one, there's some stuff you should know, I think, before we continue on, so please go back and listen. Long story short, he technically was a cop. He says he retired. I shouldn't say technically a cop. He was a cop. He says he retired. Technically, I guess you could say that, but more accurately, he was definitely fired.
Yeah, there's a difference.
For doing uncoply behaviors, I think is a good way to put it. And we'll just continue from here.
Yeah, I just want to say that was a harsh reality that you started off with.
Yeah.
We could be doing better. To me, I think our last episode on David Politis is probably the most important one, because that's not what you're hearing talked about. All the other stuff that I'm going to talk about today, about him being an excellent researcher, excellent person, is going to be a really short episode. It's just going to be debunking of the missing 411. What we talked about in the previous episode about his police brutality in his, what was it referred to of? Solicitation that he got actually fired for, to me, is the bigger thing. But yeah, today we're just gonna tackle missing 411, so let's just jump right into it. According to Politis, his work on this subject began when he was doing research in the national park and an off-duty park ranger found him and expressed concern about the questionable nature of some of the missing person cases which occurred in the parks.
What was he doing that a park ranger is like, you know, I gotta go to David Politis. He's the guy who can break this.
I assume. So the ranger, he says, knew Politis' background and asked him to research the issue.
No, he did not know his background.
I assume the background that he's talking about is Bigfoot, not the police brutality solicitation and so on.
Yeah, you hear those stories. Like, you're like, oh, this guy needs to...
Yeah.
You know what? Maybe he's like, this guy needs something. I'm going to give him something.
Yeah. He didn't even know who he was. He was just like, that guy right there.
Oh, that poor guy.
That guy looks like he needs something to do. I assume it's Bigfoot. So just in speculatorying
about this. I think it's speculating.
Already. Someone who's into Bigfoot and would know David Politis about Bigfoot, and the speculation is, of course, that it was about Bigfoot. But this guy, if that's what he's knowing him for, he's already a Bigfoot person. I'm a Bigfoot person. I'm into the paranormal things in life. That's already what this guy's going to him with, right? So he already is, like, of that mind going to Politis with this.
And I feel like Bigfoot people, they don't want to know the outside bad stuff about other Bigfoot people. They just want to focus on the good stuff together.
Yeah, the good stuff about Bigfoot. So Politis is like, out of the goodness of my heart, of course I will, and asserts that he uncovered multiple lines of evidence suggesting negligence on the part of the Park Service in failing to locate the missing people, suggesting that there is some sort of cover-up happening. Politis asserts that there are specific criteria in the missing person cases that must be met in order to be considered by him in the missing 411 cases.
I started to develop some things that I call profile points. And those are things that come up time and time again on these cases.
They are that they're rural disappearances, there's no suspects on the case, no history of mental illness, can't be voluntarily disappeared, can't be a...
I wonder how often it comes up that he's like deep into a researching a missing person and it's like, oh wait, they wanted to disappear. I just drop it.
I'm gonna go on a limb after doing all this research and say that doesn't happen. Not to spoil anything. Yeah. They can't be voluntary disappearances, no evidence of animal attack, lack of a scent of canine puppies for scent trail, missing clothing or shoes, boulder fields, and berries are somehow related.
Right, I forgot he did the berry stuff.
Yeah, the berries. Bad weather, found near creeks or bodies of water, occur between 4 to 5 p.m. or slightly later. If found alive, they're found unconscious or semi-conscious, and when questioned, they can't remember details about the event. Low-grade fevers are often involved, and they're most often found in an area that had already been searched. So, he broadened his investigation to include missing people from across the world, and this led to his belief that he has uncovered a mysterious series of worldwide disappearances, which he said defied logical and conventional explanations. There are now 10 missing 411 books, 3 missing 411 documentaries, one of which is called Missing 411 The UFO Connection, which I find weird. That has to be the closest he's ever come to saying it's something.
Yeah.
So I was shocked to see that. So we've got Eastern United States, unexplained disappearances of North Americans that have never been solved, Western United States and Canada, unexplained disappearances of North Americans that have never been solved, North America and beyond. That's its own, North America and beyond. The Devils and the Details, A Sobering Coincidence, Hunters, Off the Grid, Law, Canada, and Montana. Those are all the books. I probably said that really weird, so it sounds like all one book, but they're all different books. They're all 10 of them I just named. You can't see the points that I have. You're probably thinking now, like, this sounds very mysterious. What way is this guy gonna take this? I don't know. I mean, go listen to his interviews. You can see where he takes it yourself. This is not what this podcast is. That's just telling you what he's up to.
He's already covered that.
Yeah, he's covered it. I've covered what an asshole he is in the first one. Now, let's just check out the critiques of his work. Probably one of the biggest ones is that people go missing for various reasons and just are plain never found everywhere. It doesn't have to be paranormal means. I want to think it is, personally, but the odds are so minuscule that it's actually something paranormal.
Yeah.
I mean, I happily accept that it's aliens, reptilians, boulder rock people. The options are limitless. And that's what is so appealing to these people, because he's not, to me and these people, because he doesn't say, so your mind just wanders like crazy. It's like a horror movie where they never show the bad ghost, right? Like, you can think of how scary it is, but the minute they show it, it's like, oh, that sucks.
Yeah, that is really where all horror movies lose their rewatch value, is where they actually
when you show the monster thing. Reasons for going missing in real life, and probably most of his cases, can include an individual deliberately wanting to disappear to find a new identity, falling or a sudden health crisis leading to a lone person becoming immobilized off trail, drowning, a bear or other animal attack, environmental exposure, or even deliberate disappearance. I just said that. It may come up again. Sorry in advance for anything that comes up more than once. I do what I can. These cases are not outside the frequency that one would expect, or that there is anything unexplainable that I was able to identify. They're just regular missing persons cases, which I admit I am compelled by as well. Just like unsolved mysteries. You love it because there's no answer. And I'm sorry to say love it, because these are people who have families who are actually dealing with this.
Yeah.
So I hate to say it that way. I'm sorry. But there's a huge market for true crime and stuff like that. And it's very popular. There's something about not knowing the answer
Exactly. Not only that, there's a huge market for not having an answer.
Oh, yes.
And presenting it as being mysterious.
People want to know. They want to know what the end result is. They want closure when it comes to these things. So there's something that's very fascinating by happened to this person.
I think in the unsolved persons or missing persons entire podcast genre, they don't want to know the answer. They just want to be able to speculate or think about all the different possibilities. They don't want an actual clue.
In the end,
bettering your business takes working with the best. With the James Hardie Alliance, you gain access to leads, training, networking, and support from the number one brand of siding in North America. Achieve new levels of success by joining the James Hardie Alliance today.
That's David Pilatus' job.
Mm-hmm.
Another big critique is the fact that people have independently looked into some of his accounts and found major flaws that Paulides does not correct. Details like Paulides claiming a person was never found, but there are newspaper reports that the person was found a short time later. Or Paulides claiming no one knows why a person went missing when the missing person contacted the news, family, or police to state why they ran off. Some of the reasons people have given for going missing include avoiding abusive relationships, tired of being around house guests that overstay their welcome, and so on. So the fact that David Paulides constantly tries to play up the paranormal angle is a much lesser problem than the fact that you can't trust his version of events that are being put forth by him. Just the speculation on my part that this could be why he's self-publishing, because he's not actually publishing correct facts.
About that end, just nobody wanted to publish it.
Yeah,
not exactly. That it was wrong that they didn't want to publish it.
True. I mean, you're going to have to fact check, but yeah.
Yeah. And also, yeah, there's no actual editor involved in his process, I don't think either. So nobody reviewing his research.
If he doesn't want it, then he doesn't have to have it. A blog from one of the largest missing persons website on the internet. Yep.
Are there non-internet blogs now?
There are non-internet websites, yes.
Okay.
I assume that's a newspaper. Largest missing persons website reviewed one of the books in 2012. They said some interesting things, like the children being found impossibly far away. But they also point out that it's never mentioned by David that two cases are thought to be serial killer victims. That would be both Thomas Bowman and Bruce Kremen, two of the people profiled in the book, and they are presumed victims of the serial killer Mac Ray Edwards, a fact Paulides fails to mention or correct. Some of Paulides' cases also go back a century or more, which would mean that some of those people are not listed with law enforcement or on missing persons databases anywhere, which is something he really gloms onto, that there's no list or anything that he can find. Yeah. So he's independently doing all this research himself.
If you go back that far, like we're talking about like Pinkerton was just coming up with his investigation skills from stumbling across those forgers.
No, yeah, some of them are that far back. You would know that from listening to literally any interview. He brings up really old cases.
He does,
Which, I mean, if you have anything, you wouldn't be pulling anything from that long ago. Another case where he never discusses the evidence of drug use at the camp where they originated, or a positive drug screen. A case included in one of his books where a football player was acting weird. While drug use was brought up, it's never been brought up. The autopsy showed the victim had CTE, which is a...
That's a concussion-based brain issue.
Yeah. One of the cases of a missing ranger is showcased on a show called Disappeared, showed the ranger to be depressed due to his divorce and life choices. This is someone telling the story. Sorry, I should have said that. Someone talking here. The person claims he told David this, and he said all the reports he had on the case didn't show that the ranger was depressed due to divorce and life choices. So that's another thing. David won't contact survivors because before he wrote the book, he talked to search and rescue people and said, don't. So while he has talked to some relatives, it's not every case. Disappeared had several people directly involved in the disappearance speak on camera and didn't just go by reports like David did for the case.
Yeah, and when I've seen that he actually interviews family or people involved in the case, it's generally because they disagree with what the reports found. So he wants to use that.
Yeah, I actually found a Reddit, good old Reddit, that goes through case by case in great detail. There's a lot of them, and just tears them apart in absolute detail. They find the original account, Paulides' research, there's charts, news articles, so and so on. Lots of information that's just not accurate on David Paulides' part of his reporting. All in all, he misleads on cases, uses inaccurate information, and makes bold claims on the case being mysterious based on inaccurate information. For example, going missing and traveling in total darkness during the night versus going missing in the morning, which he says is a criteria of his, which he just ignores. That's just one. So Kyle Pollack did an article looking into the missing 411 books titled, quote, "An Investigation of the Missing 411 Conspiracy." He took the book Missing 411, Western United States and Canada, and a random number generator and selected several pages of the Hyman's categorical imperative, which is do not try to explain something until you are sure there is something to be explained to start. First off, he found Paulides did not make any disappearances up. Point one, Paulides. Good job. He didn't make anything up.
I think that's the first good thing we've actually said about him.
It is. Yeah, that should go on his book, did not make any
sense. That's a quote.
Yet, both cases are banal and devoid of any apparently unusual qualities, just random disappearances. But then the author finds these random beauties. Quote, the oldest victim in my audit involved a 69-year-old hiker climbing Mount Shasta, moving alone in wind conditions estimated at 70 miles per hour. Once he split off from his companions, he was never seen again. I was finding these cases to be fairly mundane until I arrived at the hiker's disappearance. Following a deadpan factual reporting of the details, Paulides quotes a local person saying cryptically that, according to local legend, beings called Lemurians lived underneath Mount Shasta. Maybe the Lemurians got Carl. The text is decorated sparsely with this and other head-scratching non-sequiturs?
Non-sequitur.
Non-sequiturs.
Just completely unrelated.
For example, in the last case of my brief audit, a woman named Amy disappears while exercising. Her body was never recovered, but her wristwatch was found in a riverbed years later. Paulides points out that years after that, a woman named Anne disappeared from the same place. He felt the need to point out that both of their names start with A and their first names only had three letters. I can only presume Paulides is open to the possibility that some nefarious Batman villain is at work in this area. Beware of the three-letter killers.
I remember that too, and he was talking about people going missing in cities in the like German background.
Yeah. Then you get things like the fact that berries and berry bushes play a common role in many disappearances is quite intriguing. End quote by Pollock. I'm going to go more into what he has to say, but he's kind of... I don't know how he's coming to these conclusions of what these people have in common. It's almost like he's looking for anything.
Yeah.
Anything that can tie one to another.
A's. Literally A's.
And like literally berry bushes. Like where are you going to go into a bush and there's not berry bushes?
Yeah, that's kind of wilderness needs to eat.
Yeah.
It's true. I'm frankly shocked that Lemuria came up in this episode.
Yep. It did.
We've done an episode on it if you want to go back.
We sure have. We always need to tie another episode into an episode. Paulides describes the pattern of these cases. The pattern consists of some loose criteria such as victims found deceased with clothing removed, pants, shoes, or boots, typically. Easily explained by paradoxical undressing. Taylor brought it up in the last episode.
That's the word.
This is a condition found in people experiencing hypothermia who feel irrationally hot and remove clothing to cool themselves.
Yeah, it's basically when you're about to die, your body releases the heat from the vital organs to the rest of the body, which makes you feel very warm, and people get undressed when they're dying of hypothermia in the middle of winter.
Very easy to even die of exposure in the middle of summer when you're in the middle of the woods for a couple of days when it gets down. We're used to the comfort of our home and stuff like that, and when you don't know how to survive in the wilderness over a few days and you're losing that heat and have nothing to keep you warm, this is what's going to happen, even though it seems illogical for us to want to keep warm. And he's saying there's a big mystery to it. This also applies with the low-grade fever that he has as a part of his criteria with the paradoxical undressing. Another is a deceased body recovered but found a distance or elevation away from the last known whereabouts that defies common sense. However, he doesn't talk about alive people that this has happened to. People can move and gain a lot of ground.
Yeah, and in fact, alive. They can go to places where people have looked for them. That's just
true.
It's kind of like one of the rules that you're supposed to do when you're lost is not move, but people do it all of the freaking time. And that's part of the problem is they end up in traps.
Yeah, we're going to bring that up as well. He loves to say whatever amount of distance is far. It's against all odds. I don't believe it.
Yep. It's impossible.
Which he uses especially with children. And to back this up, he uses a search and rescue manual to quote that 95% of missing 7-year-olds are found within a 4.5 mile radius. You still have 5% who are going to be found outside of that 4.5 mile radius. Or not found at all. This means rescuers expect to find some children outside of this radius. Finding a 7-year-old who traveled 10 to 15 miles is usually more difficult than finding a 7-year-old who only traveled 2 miles.
Yeah, well, just think of how much area you have to cover, because they could have walked 7 miles in any direction. So that just exponentially increases how far you have to go.
Yeah, and if a child is not found, we do not know how far they traveled. This means the stats are incomplete regarding how far children walk.
A fair point.
A 7-year-old walking 7 miles is not evidence that there is a missing 411 abductor in the first place, and many children are capable of walking considerable distances. Despite live people doing this, most of these supposedly common self-defying distances Pilates mentions are just a few miles. Pollitt goes on to say, granted, terrain and conditions have a huge impact on lost hikers. I don't want to dismiss anything outright due to low magnitude, but I don't find anything exceptional in the cases I reviewed. The strangest case I recall was a hiker who was found 3 days later, 14 miles from his last known location. To me, a hiker, this is not an implausible distance to cover in that time. I just want to say, while I'm thinking of it, another one is bad weather around the disappearance, which could also explain why the person is missing in the first place, because they get disoriented. There's some freak weather event that happens to
impact the path or the trail.
Impact the path of the person who's on the trail. Yes, thank you. Another criterion is to not actually be missing. A minority of cases in the catalog involve missing people who were recovered alive. Curiously, they all seem to be young children. I suppose an adult gone missing and found can self-attest that their missing time was explained by ordinary circumstances. Children may not have the same developmental functions to coherently account for their whereabouts, thus leaving a gap to be filled with the possibility of something unusual. I do believe he talks about a child that says that they were taken by a bear.
I was also just going to say that children also lie just all the time.
Yeah,
all
it's come up before in this podcast. Strangely enough, they sure do. They make shit up. With such imprecise criteria, it seems Pilates considers himself the only person fully qualified to identify a missing person's case as belonging to the missing 411 or not. The proposed unusualness of these cases...
Elsie, are missing 411 cases like your criteria for a Fringy Mini?
It might be. You know what? It's a good cataloging system, okay? I would not be surprised if someone else is using it. I should trademark it. I should send them a cease and desist. Just randomly.
And ask for an autograph, too.
The proposed unusualness of these cases seems hardly greater than one would find for a rare and unplanned occurrence such as a disappearance. Basically, he's just taking disappearances and putting them into a book. Pilates relies heavily on look at all these cases, even if one or two are explainable, it can't all be explainable, which doesn't equal something mysterious happening, unfortunately.
No, that also means that you're kind of lazy in how you're putting a book together if you're just throwing them all in and say, sure, some of these can be explained.
I mean, you see the same thing with UFOs, but surely you can't apply the same logic to this. Another point Pilates makes is that there are disproportionately large amounts of people disappearing from national parks. Turns out, if anything, you're less likely to disappear from a national park than from a major city. Hundreds of thousands and more visit the national parks each year. And in those people visiting, there are a whole lot of dummies. You see them in headlines. They want to pet bison. They want to feed the wildlife. And you know those people want to go on hikes.
We really could just make Fridgy Minis out of these ridiculous stories.
Oh, yeah.
And we would never run out of them.
No.
Because people do not know how to act in nature.
And these are the people going into national parks. And of course, some of them are going to want to go hiking. And they're not going... They're feeding wild.
Yeah, they heard about it on TV once. They want to try it out.
And they're not going to go into the wild. Like, think about like Grand Canyon National Park. Someone's going to be like, I want to hike. And they're not prepared for the environment that they're going into. Of course, something's going to happen.
Yeah. I mean, every time you read a headline that says Florida man and then is continued from there, that person has the potential to go into a national park and want to go hiking.
And go missing. As an aside from this article, I'm giving you this information from, which is the Kyle Pollak one. I'd like to add that on an interview on Midnight in the Desert with Art Bell, great episode actually to listen to. Art Bell actually asks him some good questions he doesn't know how to answer. Art questions him and says, is this outside of the expected norm? People going missing versus people visiting the park. Are there more disappearances in the parks based on our expectation of national averages? Let's hear the numbers. You take your number of mysterious disappearances, divide the amount of people that visit the parks, then do it for North America. What do we get? Politis says, no, thank you. Just kidding. What he actually says is, I'd be playing into their hands by giving you a number. That's literally what he says.
At this point, I'd be playing into their hands by giving you a number.
Wait, there's people that are against him?
It's the National Park Service, obviously.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, there's a conspiracy about them, you know. That's also a part of his missing 411 shtick.
I thought the whole thing was just they were too lazy to put the list together.
I don't know. He really, like, gets it out there that there's a conspiracy with the National Park Service.
No, if there's any conspiracy about the National Parks, it's because they're finding stairs in the middle of nowhere and not...
if anything. But yeah, he definitely alludes to... as well, that the National Park Service is in on whatever's going on. So yeah, he won't give a number. So we don't even know if it's like that big of a problem or not. He says it's a huge problem. Back to Pollack, his article. In regards to Politis' claims about exorbitant amounts of money for the National Park Service to provide a list of missing peoples, or they don't keep a list, so on and so on, Pollack spoke with a National Park Service public affairs representative about the handling of missing persons cases. Cases are entered into the National Law Enforcement Telecommunications System, NLETS. This is a federated data sharing system used by law enforcement nationwide. I await proof that any cases failed to be entered. Obviously, the Park Service is going to go to law enforcement in the case that someone is missing or found deceased. Obviously, they have some means to go in and see what's going on, but it's not like they're not going to contact anybody.
Yeah.
That actually is of the law, and they're not like a governing body of law, so they obviously have people.
No, for the most part, they're making sure that people are staying on trails and driving.
They keep looking
correctly.
After the park.
Yeah. Like, they got another job that isn't search and rescue. Search
exactly.
And rescue does search and rescue.
And they're dealing with the idiots trying to feed wildlife. Like, they're not going to go searching. Like, some of these people are a part of
the search and rescue. That's the secondary to their actual job there, yeah.
Obviously, actual law enforcement is where the information is going to be tracked, not through, like, a list on a piece of paper kept by the Park Service. So I'm actually not sure what Politis is looking for here.
Now that I think about it too, why would the different national parks need to share this information with each other? Because national parks are big enough that they just deal with people missing in their area.
Exactly. And Politis is like, oh, well, they keep a list of movies filmed there. And he actually says, like, the Western National Park Service keeps a list of movies that are filmed there. And it's like Western National Park. So it's almost like they don't have to share that information as well, which would just be for fun. So it's almost like he's just kind of blowing hot air to find something that, you know, people are going to be like, they should be keeping a list. They absolutely should. But, like, when you look at it logically like that, like, no, they shouldn't. It would just be someone, like, writing down,
yeah,
this person went missing in this park, in which case I too would charge him exorbitant amounts of money to put that list together. Pollack goes on with points, but those are the most interesting. The rest are kind of bold claims with nothing to back them up by Politis, not Pollack, or simply leaving out facts, whether he's aware of them or not. Pollack says, I won't take the books of gospel, and if any case interests you that Politis talks about, hit Google and dig deeper. Missing 411 research boils down, this is not Pollack anymore, it's me. So we're getting to the good stuff. Missing 411 research boils down to Politis believing or disbelieving things, not Politis collecting evidence and confirming things. He reaches conclusions without sufficient evidence. He beats around the bush saying he won't give an answer. However, it's obvious he's not pointing to anything mundane. He alludes to it being aliens or portals or paranormal of some sort.
Do you think it's because he would also have to put work in, like more work,
no,
to actually give an answer? Or do you think it's the mystery is the most important part?
He's a salesman. Yeah. He knows the audience. He's on the specific circuit of paranormal. He knows who he's trying to sell these to. Politis gives no reason for these disappearances, but finds odd correlations for them, which we already talked about. For example, the Amy and Anne thing. In his analysis, he concludes with, I've exhausted my exploration for anything I've exhausted my exploration for anything genuinely unusual. After careful review, to me, not a single case stands out, nor do the frequencies involved seem outside of expectations. Is a quote from someone. I'm sorry, you should be named, but you are not. Another belief you're going to like is how he argues against serial killers, which if you remember, two of the cases he uses are actually thought to be victims of a serial killer. And it's that he lives in Colorado and 80% of the people on trails are armed. This is why it can't be serial killers. That's the reason he gives.
Okay. God, like, he's what? One of those people too. Oh man, that argument when there's like a school shooting, we need to just have more people with guns.
Yeah.
That, he's one of those
people,
isn't he?
He has to be. Like, what? Who is going hiking out in the wilderness armed? Can you imagine going on like an all-day hike being armed? I mean, we live in Canada, so maybe I'm off on that perspective, but surely this can't be right.
Yeah,
80% of people on trails are armed.
I mean, Americans who listen, you may know better than us, but this just feels wrong.
It does feel wrong.
If we're out of line here, like, please let us know. It just feels so wrong.
So this
hikers and gun advocates just seem like different groups in my mind.
Yeah, that's his reason. A lot of his points he specifically looks at to narrow down his cases can be debunked as well. People found in an area that has already been searched. People do tend to walk in circles if they lost and even circle back. So this is why they're searching most areas more than once in the first place. And also why they say stay put if you get lost. So somebody can find you and you're not, you know, leaving an area they're about to search. And then you come up behind them. That people are found near bodies of water. Typically, people will also seek out bodies of water like rivers to follow when they're lost. And not only that, lots can happen if you're already in water in the first place. You can have a heart attack in the water. You can get a poisonous bug bite. You can slip and fall and hit your head. So much stuff can happen and bam, you're how many miles downstream in water at a ridiculous distance away.
And yeah, it's easy. There's usually easy trail right beside water, too.
Yep. People like the water. They like to look at it and so on. Things about water.
We could go on about water.
Exactly. Missing without a trace. Obviously, this is part of the appeal of what he's talking about. However, this is obviously a selection bias. When you're looking at national parks, which are huge, you're going to have more people who do actually go missing without a trace than in a city where there's cameras and stuff like that. And it even happens in cities. So you put that in a national park, obviously it's going to be higher. Additionally, some have criticized the lack of peer-reviewed research or scientific rigor in his work. Again, he's self-publishing. He doesn't have to. As well as the absence of transparency regarding his investigative methods. I think we did narrow that down. We're on the same system as the My Fringy Minis. Great system, by the way. Very reliable.
Yeah, that's not a criticism. That's one of his pros.
Yes. The guy loves to not speculate on what it is. I know I've said it before. I think it's for a few reasons, but he says if he does that, if he gives a reason, and then he goes and interviews a family member as someone who's gone missing, and they see him say it's Bigfoot, his credibility's out the window. Yeah, gone. He says Bigfoot, gone. The person won't want to talk to him. I love that argument for him because I'm betting he thinks no one knows why he's actually not a credible person. If they knew about the police brutality, I keep saying it and it's slipping my mind now. Listen to the first episode. Go back if you forgot. I don't have time right now, but that's actually why he's not a credible person.
Solicitation.
So if I didn't already have you convinced that this guy's a shitty person, I have some stories shared by Redditors that I just don't think I have enough time for, but let me share some of the highlights. They don't like that he masquerades as a former police officer doing excellent research when he's used his position to fraudulently obtain something out of it. He doesn't research his cases well, often getting information incorrect, then self-publishes incorrect information and does not correct it. When faced with any criticism, say of incorrect information, he gets angry and is quick to fly off the handle. When faced with a question he doesn't want to answer, he tells people to go read the book. It sounds like you haven't read the book, and dismisses them. He says that a lot on like his interviews that he does.
Well, yeah, and it's because there's not enough time to actually get into each case. So it's a very easy way to avoid it. And in fact, generally when you see people trying to say in criticism that's taken out of context, it's so easy to just say and never have to go back.
Yeah, that's true. which leads me to the difficult ego, which I could see him having coming from the positions he's held and situations he's been in. Lacks professionalism. It's a sales job. He's not a dumb guy. He was scamming celebrities. Now he is using data, presenting it as high strangeness and touring the conspiracy conferences. His books are vanity publishing. He has not been offered a book deal that has ever been mentioned. I was fascinated by the intrigue of 411. People love mysteries. People love true crime. I love Serpo. It doesn't make it true or like anything actually mysterious is going on. And that brings me to the end of David Paulides.
Wow.
Yeah.
While you were talking too, I looked up his Wikipedia page.
Yeah.
There's no section for criticism, which really surprised me. And it's a lot of the stuff that really stays under the radar.
Wikipedia is one of the best for criticizing things.
I know, and for like people in this category. Down to earth. Yeah.
Yeah. And I find it also funny that it has nothing about his police work on there and him being fired.
Outside of like a brief statement.
Yeah, because this can all easily be sourced to be put onto there and added onto that page. So I found that interesting because Wikipedia is usually on it to debunk something very quickly.
Yeah.
Good point. Yeah.
So, yeah, Chelsea, thank you for that, just because I did like listening to David Paulides. Just like he's a good talker, even like if the stuff he's saying is utter garbage.
I know get that far. It makes me think we could probably do a similar thing if we wanted to sell some books, because people obviously really like The Missing People. All you got to say is we don't know what happened, but it's probably really mysterious.
Yeah.
Then we just make a book about it.
We just got to find the time.
Yep. So we won't do it.
Here we are spending our time on actual research into these horrible people.
You're welcome.
Yes. And with that, Chelsea, thank you very much for this episode. I have been Taylor here with Chelsea. We are Journey to the Fringe. Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Okay. You were a cop?
For 20 years, yeah.
20 years. Regular cop?
I worked street crimes, detectives, SWAT team.
Okay, yeah.
Three or four different detective units.
Regular cop. All right.
Thank you for listening to Journey to the Fringe. If you have liked what you have listened to, please like, share, subscribe, or follow, depending on what venue you are listening to us through. Also, please, if possible, leave a 5-star review, as that really helps us in the algorithms. Should you wish to interact with us, please check us out on your social media of choice. I bet you we are there. And if you really want to communicate with us and give us ideas for new episodes or tell us that we're wrong and terrible, either way, please send us an email at journeytothefringe@gmail.com. For now, I'll see you in the next episode.
Hey.